Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
This is the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, Truth Straight Up. I'm coming up momentarily. We're going to have to talk to Todd Sheets. He's an expert on the economy. Lots of stuff going on there. Okay, and then later on, also, we're going to talk about Tina Peters.
I think you've seen some of the legacy media, some of the wackiness going on in their interpretation
of a videotape that was played there. Well, we there was the guy, Apollos Pappas, was on the Steve Bannon show, and he basically we had been able to talk to Tina and her attorneys, find out what's happened. And it kind of, it puts the whole thing in perspective. So we're going to talk about that too. And then the other thing, and we can talk with Todd a little bit about this if we get him, is, you know, globalism is dead. President Trump taking Davos and the World Economic Forum by storm, obviously, announced today, okay, no, I'm not going to invade Greenland, which it was kind of funny. Bill O'Reilly was saying, I was telling you he wasn't going to invade Greenland. I was saying he's not going to invade Greenland. This is how Donald Trump kind of talks about things. He starts off really strong, then everybody goes, oh, and they freak out. And then he says, okay, here's what we really want to have happen. But I think he's really schooling the people in Europe about the problems that are going on there and the problems that they're having. And he's creating his board of peace, essentially, to do the same kinds of things that the UN should and could have been doing. I had a discussion not that long ago. We got Todd. So well, never mind. We'll go straight to Todd. Todd Sheets, author of the newsletter on wealth and progress, currently available free of charge on Substack, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, author of the book 2008, What Really Happened. And Todd, first, welcome to the show. I have a ton of things I want to talk to you about, so I'm glad you're here. Thank you.
Great, Julie. Glad to be with you. I hope I have a ton of answers for you. So
I'm sure you do. You always do. I know we were initially going to talk about your column, you know, Two Socialists in New York and Venezuela, and we'll get to this. But I wanted to kind of start out and get your thoughts on what's going on in Davos at the World Economic Forum. We had, and we'll play a soundbite later with the Secretary of Commerce basically saying, hey, globalism's dead, Europe, wake up. The UN had said, you know, Trump has a point. And he's really shaking things up over there. What do you make of all of that? Your take on it?
Yeah, I'm going to write about this this week in my Substack piece, which will probably be titled Apocalypse Not. because you know, taking off of the old war movie Apocalypse Now, I mean, it seems like each time we undergo one of these things, going back to the tariffs last spring, and then going into his bombing of the Iran's nuclear facilities in the summer, and then again here with Greenland more recently, it's like the whole world, including many people here on the right, and for example, the writers at the Wall Street Journal, who immediately start pulling their hair out as if we're headed into the apocalypse and everything's going to fall apart. And then a few days later, it's almost like, you know, the old Rosanna Dana thing on Saturday Night Live, where it's like, never mind, you know, everything seems to be fine all of a sudden. And I think we're in one of those moments. As I started writing this, I didn't think we were going to get there this quickly, you know, but I think I listened to his speech earlier today where he said, you know, I'm not going to attack anybody. I'm not going to roll the tanks in or do any of those kinds of things. And now we've got this announcement where apparently there's an agreement in principle. And I think what people have to recognize is that my take on this is we have been through 25 years of kind of a consistent, traditional, diplomatic approach to these things, which unfortunately has only failed and put us into a continually less economically robust environment and in a more threatening world. And what Trump is doing is bringing a viewpoint which on the surface feels like it's ruffling everybody's feathers, and in some ways it is, But once you work through the details, it's actually making things much safer instead of much more dangerous. And I think we're seeing another example of that here.
Well, you know, I had a conversation with a friend who was lamenting. She's very liberal that, you know, oh, Trump is going to destroy the UN. La, 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 we need the UN. And I was kind of like, for what? And then he announces this Board of Peace, right, who says, OK, you're going to, number one, if you're going to be on it, you have to pay to be on it. And we're going to do the things he flat out said that the UN should have been doing. And it's like, I think, yeah, Trump isn't saying, oh, no, we aren't going to have negotiations and trade and talks with other countries, but we're going to do it from an America first standpoint. And he's telling Europe, hey, you guys should be thinking like this, too. Why are you outsourcing everything? Why is your energy so high? I mean, your take on that.
Yeah, look, this is ruffling feathers, but we have to keep in mind he's ruffling the feathers of people who have been leading the world for the last 2 to 3 decades, like I said in just a moment ago, into a significantly much less robust economic environment and into a much more dangerous place. And so at some level, those feathers need to be ruffled, because otherwise they just keep going down this same path and we end up in a, you know, dysfunctionally socialist kind of economic environment where we can't afford the kinds of things that it takes to make us safe and secure. That's the place Europe has led themselves into right now. And that's what's happened to NATO. Unfortunately, you know, to be very blunt about it, there is no NATO other than the United States. If
right.
there was a NATO outside of the United States that was capable of being a meaningful force for peace, stability, and security in the world, then they wouldn't need, you know, we wouldn't have Europe sitting around waiting for us to come in and end a conflict between what are currently, in spite of past reputations, two very, very small, economically weak countries. And I'm including Russia in that. You know, Russia now, you know, back in this old Soviet Union, their economy was not as large as ours, but at the peak, it wasn't that far away. It was kind of comparable to where China is today. But today, Russia's economy, which is what drives the amount they can spend on military efforts, is about the level of Italy or Canada. You know, so very, very small. And there's no better proof of how far back they've slid, as a military threat, than the fact that here we are 4 years later and they still haven't been able to make that much progress in Ukraine, which is a war I think they expected to win within, you know, a matter of months, if not less than that. And so,
right.
you know, if Europe was a real meaningful, part of NATO that could really contribute to the world's defense, they wouldn't be sitting there with this skirmish going on in Eastern Europe, which is not really a threat to the United States, waiting around for the United States to do something to take care of things. And that's a harsh thing to say in some ways, but it's also true. And if you don't say these things at some point and you don't force them to acknowledge it, nothing ever changes. That's what's been going on, you know, for one presidency after another until Trump came along. Everybody whined and complained and talked to them about needing to finally step up and do something on defense, and they'd sit there and nod their heads, and nobody ever did anything. So,
right.
I mean, I think that's the reality here.
I think so, too. You know, and it was kind of funny. I saw a thing where, you know, they were all like, oh, Trump's going to invade Greenland. So several European countries sent troops to defend Greenland. Well, one, they sent like one guy. And then I saw a headline, too. Somebody sent like 13 soldiers and they all went home after like a day. I mean, it was just they're still living in a world where they think that somehow the optics are going to influence Trump. And he's just like, whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's like Greenland is important. And if you guys don't recognize that, you know, I think, like you said, you can't even win the war in Ukraine, right? So don't be talking to me about Greenland. Let me switch gears. I'm going to totally switch gears here, but I've been wanting to talk to you about this because I know you know your book, 2008, What Really Happened. You know so much about the housing crisis and the situation. So here in Denver, they had some headlines recently where one downtown office building sold for $1.2 million. Now, I was talking to my brother about this, and he was like, well, you know, that's what condos are going for here. And I'm like, no. Not like the top floor, the entire building. They recently had another thing where two 17-story office towers sold for a total of $3.2 million, a drop of 90%. And they acknowledge they don't really know what they're going to do with them, right? I mean, they can't be converted for affordable housing. What does that do to sort of the economy of a downtown when their office towers? I mean, I could buy a skyscraper, really, practically. You know what I mean? I mean, that's insane. And is it going to work itself out, or is this bad?
Well, you know, I mean, let's step back for a second. I'm guessing if you go into some of the nicer areas of Denver, it'd be hard to touch a home for those prices, a single-family home, right?
Exactly.
And so, yeah, this would fit into what I've called, I use this phrase when I talked about Mamdani recently in New York. And it's true of so many of these downtown areas that have been controlled by pretty far left, true blue democratic regimes for a very long period of time. You get into the socialist doom loop, and one bad policy leads to another bad policy. And as these things compound upon themselves, it drives the economy further and further into the ground. And yeah, these things do have meaningful repercussions. You just think about, you know, think about the lost property taxes that are available to fund all of the things, you know, that ideally would be helping make this a downtown area like Denver's, you know, vibrant and capable of attracting people, or even at the most, you know, basic level, capable of funding, you know, the police effort that it takes to make people feel safe and secure to come into an area and visit restaurants and want to put a business down there and that kind of thing. So, yeah, these things do have a meaningful impact on areas. And if they can't get turned around, and if people keep, you know, piling one bad policy on top of another, you know, what you end up with is Venezuela or something like that, or a pocket of the system that's like Venezuela.
And you know, the socialist, the doom loop is exactly right. I mean, what we saw from the pandemic, so no one goes downtown. The mayor, you know, it's flooded with homeless people. It's flooded with people openly doing drugs. The police don't really even address it anymore. So restaurants close. So now there's nowhere to eat if you go downtown. It's dangerous if you go downtown. So people quit going downtown. So offices and businesses move away. It just makes it worse, right? So now you've got buildings, seriously, downtown Denver skyscrapers that are 30% leased. I mean, who wants to work there, right? That'd be creepy to go into work like that. And I don't know how, I mean, with the continued policies, I don't know how you turn that around, because, I mean, that's got to, what does that do to the value of the skyscraper next door to it, right? When the one that you just sold for $1.2 million and you've got your office tower now where I think, you know, some of the payments are coming due, all the refinancing things, stuff like that. I mean, that's got to have an impact on everything downtown, doesn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And, you know, I mean, this brings me around to something else I want to write about at some point. I haven't for a long time. But again, you get into these doom loops. One bad policy leads to another. It goes down and further and further and further. And what this reminds me of is, and I've heard this in many different ways. We heard it from Obama when he was running for president in different ways. Now we're hearing it from Mamdani, from other people in the far left socialist wing of the party, or in these inner cities all over the country. And it was the phrase Obama used to use is, you know, the hard right rugged individualism is pick yourself up by your bootstraps, even if you don't have any bootstraps. And what I want to ask those people is, if you're talking about inner city America or many of these states that have been controlled by the increasingly far left for the last 50 or 60 years, why don't these people have bootstraps at this point in time? I mean, you started the war on poverty 60 years ago. There is nothing that more clearly shows how much your policies have failed than the fact that these cities and these communities controlled by your policies are still at this point. And so, you know, the sad thing is we went down the wrong path in trying to rebuild these communities, and this is where it's gotten us.
Well, and they talk about they want to make all these downtown skyscrapers and they want to turn them into affordable housing. And never mind that I think realistically the cost of converting a business office tower into, apartments is going to be cheaper to probably just, blow the whole thing up and start from scratch. But Colorado, thanks to these policies, part of your doom loop, has for the first time, like ever, a net emigration, more people are leaving. So it's like, and no one wants to be downtown anyway. So it's like, who do they think is, even if they could turn them into affordable housing, who do they think is going to live there, right? And what are they going to do there? And where are they going to eat? Because the restaurants are closing. I mean, it's just, you're right. It's just, how long do you think it takes a city to come out of something like this?
Yeah, well, I think, so there is some good news here. Okay. And the good news is these communities can be turned around. The bad news is, and let me just interject something. You know, Adam Smith, kind of the founding father of economics and of free market capitalism, had a saying that was along the lines of, little else is needed to raise a country from the lowest level of barbarism to the highest level of prosperity, but peace, easy taxes, and a tolerable administration of justice. And so what we need to turn these communities around is we need a new regime who knows how to bring those and put those things in place. And what that means is it's some of what Trump has been trying to do in these major cities. You know, first of all, you start policing and you make these communities safe for the law-abiding citizens. The next thing you have to do, in my opinion, is the same thing that has lifted up underperforming economies all over the world, all over the United States throughout history. You have to create an opportunity for hard work and upward mobility to take root so that people can find jobs, start working their way up through the system. It doesn't matter if they started $1, $2, $3 an hour. It just has to be more than they can make in the gangs running drugs or whatever it is. And you've got to shut those down so they can't make that much money doing that. And businesses will start to open and the communities will start to flourish. And if you have, the peace and the security and the rule of law, and you give these people the opportunity to start businesses, even with very low wages. And part of that means to me, you have to break the psychology of these minimum wages, which make it illegal to start a local business at wages that a business owner can make some money on. Right. And so you just have to recreate all of that. But what we've got to do is we've got to get the people who've been running these communities to acknowledge the failure of their policies, or get the people living in these communities to vote for a new approach to try and turn things around. But it's very doable, and I think it can happen much faster than people would believe if we take, those steps.
You hit it on the head, as if people want to, because I think going back to your whole, talking about Mondami and the socialism, I suspect there are people in the Denver, political scene who think, we have communists on the city council, like flat out communists, and in the state legislature, like, good, I'm glad the banks and these business, these social, or these, the white supremacists who run the banks and the businesses, I'm glad they're going broke. I'm glad they lost all their money, without any kind of thought as to the actual consequences of something like that.
Yeah, and the sad thing, another sad and tragic thing, is that so many of these well-meaning people, especially over the last 20 to 30 years, have gone through an educational system that starts earlier and earlier. It's included the universities for a very long time, but now it's stretched down earlier and earlier. And they've gone through an educational system basically run by, pretty far left, you know, socialist, communist kinds of thinkers, whether they admit it or not. And basically they've been taught that everything that you see failing is a failure of capitalism and a sign that we need to get rid of capitalism. We need the government to take over the properties and make it a more fair and humane system for everybody. Instead of being taught the truth, which we've now seen throughout the world and throughout history, that the real problems are failures of collectivist, socialist, communist policies to deliver on their promises. Yeah. And that's been so deeply ingrained, it's like, you know, there's just a knee-jerk reaction of, oh, it's failed. That's the fault of capitalism. We've got to take it over and make it better for everybody.
Well, and in the meantime, in Denver, I was joking with some of my friends, like, we should all pull our money and we'll buy a downtown skyscraper. And again, you know, we'll live there forever. Hey, Todd, no surprise, you were able to answer all of my questions that I know you probably weren't prepared for. So let me, a final question for you. And, you know, as we said, you've got your newsletter is available for free on Substack. Where should people go to find you and all of your columns, some of the ones that you've given us a preview of here?
Yeah, so just go to Substack and search my name, Todd Sheets, or On Wealth and Progress, or both, and you'll find it. Or you can go to my website, toddsheetswriter.com, and there'll be a link there. And then also I do a pretty short 10 to 15-minute weekly podcast kind of thing on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, that basically has, you know, for people that would rather, you know, hear it in a short version thing than to read through the Substack pieces. And again, just search for Todd Sheets or On Wealth and Progress on any of those kind of podcast sources.
All right. Well, sir, thank you for your time and your thoughts once again. Sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Julie, and have a great afternoon.
You too. Todd Sheets there. As you said, you can search him up. He's got a newsletter on wealth and progress. I want to go back to some of the stuff that he talked about in a second, because I think it is interesting to some of the things that Donald Trump and his administration are saying at the World Economic Forum. But I also wanted to spend a little bit of time on this Tina Peters thing. So there have been some good news on the Tina Peters front. Governor Pola said he thinks her sentence is too harsh, clearly indicating he's thinking about letting her out of prison early. We had an appellate court that certainly was expressing concern about the way that her case was handled in the criminal court. That could end up lessening her sentence. We had a federal court judge, although he said he didn't have jurisdiction, did indicate that he thought there were issues with the way the sentence was handled as well. So a lot of that was good news. And so, of course, you know, that the people who are still in the fake election denier mode can't handle that. A lot of the people in the legacy media. So the Department of Corrections, which can decide when it wants to release a video and when it doesn't want to release a video, released a video of and the headlines in the Denver Post and on Channel 9 were Tina Peters assaults another inmate, right? And you see this picture of Tina and another inmate kind of, you know, with hands on each other, right? And then portions of the video have been released. But a guy by the name of Apollos Pappas was on the Steve Bannon show, and he kind of walks us through what happened. And he had been able to talk to Tina and or her attorneys, who were able to explain what was going on with all of that. And so, Doug, I'm taking these out of order, but if you could play, and it's about 2 minutes long, so just bear with me. Doug, if you could please play the Tina Peters video.
Slowed it down. Tina is moving this unit, and this is a swamp cooler or an evaporative cooler. Now, I do think it is interesting why they're using a swamp cooler in the middle of winter when it is 22 degrees. As we've seen through Tina's accounts and those of other inmates, it is exceptionally hot, often reaching upwards of 90 degrees. Just bear that in mind. They're in fact using swamp coolers because apparently the HVAC system does not properly heat the place without it being unbearable. So now at this point, you're going to see this other inmate. Tina explained this to me basically frame by frame. And what's happening here when this other inmate comes up, I want you to keep in mind, she's pulling this unit and Tina's arm and head are basically right in between this unit, that swamp cooler, and the door. So that inmate right there is essentially staring right at Tina's face. And you can kind of see in the crack of the door where Tina is right there. As this unit comes up, this inmate is actually yelling, "You disrespected me, you disrespected me." Tina asked her what the problem was. She said, it's not a big deal, relax. And essentially just tried to calm her down. So, you know, if she needed to get in, she would move out of the way and move the unit for her. Now here, right there, it's hard to see, especially when you're watching at 1x speed. But when you slow it down, you can see right here, another punch. And so I'm going to show you, there's actually two times that she reaches out to strike Tina. One is here, right there. And if you're familiar with JKD, that is what is known as a lead jab or a straight punch. Because you can see how she pushes off of her back foot. And then the second time, she reaches towards Tina to strike her. So you see, this is the first one. And the second one, and you will notice that at this point now, when Tina comes out, she is already grabbing the other inmate's right arm. And you can see that right when she comes out from behind the door. But after these two strikes, Tina is already grabbing the inmate's right arm after she was hitting her. So contact already occurred before she came out from behind the door. Tina didn't just charge out for no reason. And I might add that anyone who knows Tina, despite whatever the news will say, Tina's not the kind of person to just, like, charge out at some girl because she was upset that day. That's just not who Tina is. Tina will not back down, but Tina's in no way an aggressor. She just simply is not. There's the first one. You can see her push off her back left foot and extend her right arm.
Okay, and that's it. And so, yeah, a bunch of comments here that are good. Number one, Dr. Donna says how convenient that a large portion of the interaction was behind a door out of sight of the camera. And then Jacob, did the lady spray Tina, what's she holding in her hand? And that was my comment, too. I'm not so sure that she was maybe hitting Tina, but it appears to me that she had, I mean, she looked like she was cleaning, right? She had a rag in one hand, and it looked to me like a spray bottle in the other hand. And so I don't know. To me, either she's clearly doing something, right? She's clearly lunging forward. And is she spraying Tina? Is she hitting her? Is she doing some combination of both? I don't know. But to me, it seems really clear that other inmate started it, right? Because you could see Tina's not talking to her. She's kind of is willing to think through. The inmate, aggressive inmate, I'll call her the aggressor inmate. She kind of wanders through and goes in the other room. They're not talking. There's no interaction. There's nothing going on. And Dr. Donna, that makes me wonder about that door. And Jacob, you wonder if she got something out of that. So they wait. I mean, they know where the cameras are. They know where the angles are, right? And so she waits till Tina's behind the door and then comes around really without any kind of provocation and is doing something, either spraying or hitting her. Now, I can tell you this, too, that people who have, and I've done, when I was a reporter, stories about prison, there is no sort of turn the other cheek in a prison environment. Prisons, as I said before, they are dangerous places filled with dangerous people. And so I'm sure Tina has had to learn the hard way that in a prison environment like that, if you have another inmate unprovoked starts essentially maybe attacking is too strong a word here. I don't know. But the other inmate is taking an aggressive action toward you. If you don't deal with that, then either that time or the next time or the time after that, the aggression is only going to continue. There are only, you know, it's very hard in prison to turn the other cheek and to just say, hey, never mind, right? That inmate was clearly the aggressor. She clearly started it. And I think Tina, in order to ensure her own safety, couldn't just say, hey, man, it's cool. Let's just leave it be. She had to actively defend herself, right? And I think what the media has done in Channel 9, they freeze frame a thing where it looks like Tina's hitting her. And it's just, you know, I mean, it's just outrageous that they're doing that. And to me, it simply, again, underscores, this is a dangerous environment, right? And Governor Polis said, if they're going to let Tina out, they need to let her out, right? Because every day she's there, all of this just gets worse. And I mean, and what if the first they were saying Tina was going to be charged with assault and the prison said, no one is charged with assault. And you could see everybody later on in the video, a guy looks like he maybe worked for the Department of Corrections comes in and everybody goes their own way. And Jacob, I agree with this. If the cleaning solution is poisonous, that's assault, in my opinion. Well, and again, prisons are not nice places, right? You're Tina. You have no idea what that woman has actually put in that spray bottle, right? I mean, maybe it's Windex or something like that, but maybe it's ammonia, maybe it's bleach, maybe it's something like something much worse. And then she said, is she a registered voter? Yeah. and then Jacob asked ICE to check out the attacker. And there were many jumps in the video. Yeah. Now, some of that, the jumps in this video was this guy kind of, he slowed it down and analyzed it. But again, the bottom line, when you take your time and you don't watch it fast speed and you don't watch carefully chosen portions of it, it's clear Tina is, I don't know, doing whatever her assignment was there to fill up the swamp cooler or something. The other inmate, without any kind of conversation, comes over and starts doing something, squirting her, spraying her, punching her, something with Tina. And now I don't know what was in the other room. I don't know if Tina had any way to go backwards or if Tina is only, if Tina's worried that this woman's going to trap her in there. I mean, who knows, right? But it clearly was a dangerous situation. It clearly was not, Tina didn't start it, right? And again, like I said, when you're in prison, if you may not start it, but you have to deal with it. You just can't ignore it. Otherwise, they continue to prey on you and prey on you and prey on you. And Tina's a 70-year-old woman. And in a way, it's you kind of get the impression, well, not the impression, I think a Tina Peters, before having spent a year in prison, probably wouldn't have known that she had to do that, right? So probably enough things have happened in the past year that Tina Peters has realized if she doesn't stand up for herself immediately, things are going to get bad and no one's going to stand up for her. It's hard to, I think, understand for people who haven't been in prison just how isolated and isolating it can be when you're there. Okay, that's it on the comments. So anyway, that's I just wanted to get that out there. Oh, Jacob has his hand raised. Hey, Jacob, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm watching CNN the other night, and Scott Jennings, I think that's his name, and the leader of the pack were arguing, and she was complaining that ICE makes people, you know, take out their papers. I mean, what are they going to show? Their driver's license? That's exactly right, because that driver's license now determines if you're a citizen or not, because of that little star on the, it's called the real ID. So right. They do have a reason to see a driver's license. And it's just that these people don't realize, you know, you're opening a Pandora's box. Let them see the driver's license. That's fine. I mean, people get stopped every day in the week, you know, just, so that's it. But no, there was a jump when she was moving that big, whatever that black thing was, you know, the bookcase or whatever. But there was a major jump, and I think there was an edit in there. I think there was an edit.
In the original one, or I know this guy edited it. And I don't know I looked at the original one, and they look pretty similar. This one was just slowed down, and I think he just repeated it. But you know, again, but what's interesting to me is, If Tina Peters had been assaulted by the inmate, I just really wonder whether we would have ever seen the video of that, right? Instead, they have a video that can be, you know, portrayed as looking, making Tina look bad. And they released that.
What's in the bottle? Is the bottle full of bleach, just plain water? We don't know.
Exactly.
I would defend myself if somebody's spraying bleach at me.
Right.
But nobody at the Department of Corrections is going to tell you what was in that bottle.
No. And again, like I said, it's hard. I've done just so many stories. It's like in prison, it's a dangerous place, right?
Yeah.
And it's not, like I said, I don't know if Tina could have retreated or not. Probably not. I mean, you know, and I think she had no choice there but to grab the woman's arm and back her off, right? When you're in prison, you have to back somebody off. Otherwise, they'll continue to prey on you. And that's what makes it dangerous, too, because sooner or later, something could happen. And now you're in real trouble, right? And that's, mm-hmm. I hope, you know, Paula said this, that needs more than just words. So, hey, thank you for your thoughts. Okay. Want to kind of go back to the Davos thing here for the last few minutes. I just think it's great that Donald Trump and his people are essentially schooling all of these other world leaders who like sort of destroyed. Oh, wait, real quick from Dr. Donna. I know a few people have been in prison. It's not a tea party, and to expect different treatment of her because she's more elderly than the usual prisoner is pie in the sky thinking. A lot of times prisoners slip in the shower. Oh, yeah. The fact that she's vulnerable makes her only something more vulnerable, right? If you're in prison, you don't prey on somebody who's bigger and stronger and more aggressive than you, right? You prey on somebody who's weaker than you. And I'm sure that the notoriety and the discussion about her case probably doesn't help, right? I think it all makes her more of a target. And then from Doug, more vulnerable in the closet, which has no cameras. Oh, good point, Doug. More vulnerable in the closet, which has no cameras. So pushing out into the open room was smart. Good point. You got to wonder, was there a camera in the closet? Probably not. I don't know how many cameras they have there, but that's really smart. You're right. If you're Tina, you're like, I got to get out of this dangerous environment. Back to Davos, though. This, I think, it's just great where Trump is just saying, hey, look, you guys have had your Green New Deal, Green New Scam chance, you know, all of this stuff. We've been doing things your way. Doesn't work at all. And globalism basically is dead. And they just flat out said this. And this was a comment by Howard Lutnick, Commerce Secretary, speaking at the World Economic Forum. So, Doug, if we could please play the Howard Lutnick soundbite.
Four. And the Trump administration and myself, we are here to make a very clear point. Globalization has failed the West and the United States of America. It's a failed policy. It is what the WEF has stood for, which is export, offshore, far shore, find the cheapest labor in the world, and the world is a better place for it. The fact is, it has left America behind. It has left the American workers behind. And what we are here to say is that America First is a different model, one that we encourage other countries to consider, which is that our workers come first. We can have policies that impact our workers. Sovereignty is your borders. You're entitled to have borders. You shouldn't offshore your medicine. You shouldn't offshore your semiconductors. You shouldn't offshore your entire industrial base and have it be hollowed out beneath you. You should not be dependent for that which is fundamental to your sovereignty on any other nation. And if you're going to be dependent on someone, it darn well better be your best allies. Okay? And so that is a different way of thinking. It is completely different than the WEF. I viewed the WEF as not a flagpole in the middle, but in fact, they are the flag. Whichever way the wind blew, so it blew. You should have solar. You should have wind. Why are you going to do solar and wind? Why would Europe agree to be net zero in 2030 when they don't make a battery? They don't make a battery. So if they go 2030, they are deciding to be subservient to China, who makes the batteries.
You know, and again, I'm no economist, but it seems to me that China's like going like, yeah, this is great, right? And sooner or later, if you control all the power, you're going to start using it, right? And then Europe is totally screwed. And I think the thing is this is why I think that little speech in a nutshell to me sort of explains why the Uniparty and the establishment hates Donald Trump and hates America First, right? You've got, I imagine, a lot of senators, you've got a lot of lobbyists, you've got a lot of rich people getting even richer by some of these globalist policies. And they're all just fine, right? They're not being hurt by it. They're making money from this globalist thing. And the fact that it's screwing everyone else, you know, I mean, look at here we are in Colorado. I mean, it's like we're going back to the dark ages where Excel, which, by the way, is continuing to raise our rates to pay for infrastructure they have to put in because we need to be net zero, whatever the frick that means, by 2030. Thank you, Jared Polis, right? So they're raising our rates. They're creating a structure and infrastructure that's not going to work. And in the meantime, just because it gets windy, they're turning off the power, right? And again, I think they're grooming us for that. So it's not working. And I think Donald Trump saying all of that out loud threatens like the existence and the money of a lot of the Uniparty people. And I think some of them are kind of, we've talked about this before, just sort of biding their time until Donald Trump leaves. But hopefully he can create stuff and put it in place that will exist long after he leaves. And I think the biggest thing he's doing is just waking people up, right? When you have somebody say, hey, you know what, outsourcing all of the work doesn't really do us any good. You know, and the Hillary Clinton, well, they can all learn to program computers. Well, how well is that going to work for you now, right? You got AI doing all of that. So, you know, Trump is like, we need to look out for our workers. A long time ago, and I'm going to, George Bush, I think it was a quote, he was talking to the president of China, and Bush was saying, well, you know, what keeps me up awake at night is world peace and la, la, la. And the head of China said, what keeps me up at night is trying to find jobs for the millions and millions of people I have. That, you know, they have in my country. And I think that's sort of Donald Trump's thing. We need people, they need to have jobs, they need to be working, they need to be able to make more money, you know, than their parents did, or at least feel like they're going to do better than their parents. And this globalist thing isn't working. And in Europe, it's just, it's astonishing. Like he said, it's astonishing to me that you're outsourcing all of your power to China, who openly is saying, you know, hey, we have this plan that we want to take over the world, basically, right? And you're opening your borders to people who want to take over your country. You're opening your borders to people who, you know, say, you know, death to America. Why would you want to do that, right? You're opening your borders to a culture, some like in Somalia, where they don't look at it as fraud. They look at it as, you just go to the United States and you can say, I have a daycare center and with autistic kids, and people just start giving you millions of dollars. And you can, who could believe this? You can put it in a suitcase, millions of dollars, and take it back home to Somalia. All you got to do is grease a few palms in the United States. You know, who do we blame? The only person to blame for that is ourselves, right? And it's just, and I think Trump is just saying all of that out loud. From Jacob. Letnik worked for Cantor Fitzgerald, the company that lost many employees on 9/11. Huh? And he said, that's funny. We're going to we're going to wind power, but we have to shut down the power lines when it's windy. Well, exactly. Exactly. So I guess what good will it do us when all is said and done? And, you know, and finally, kind of to close, I read an interesting column. He can be kind of wacky. So keep that in mind. It's a kid, he's an adult, Echo, E-K-O on X. And I think he worked with Musk and some of the Doge stuff. But he's got a column now. And like I said, some of it gets kind of wacky. But he had an interesting take today on the economy. And he is saying, and I think he was right. He said there was a time kind of after the baby boomer generation where, you know, plumbers, carpenters, truck drivers, people who like actually built things and people who actually did things, those kind of jobs, blue collar jobs, right, were looked down on. And everybody started getting white collar jobs where you don't really do anything, right? You're a hedge fund person. You don't actually, you know, make anything or do anything really tangible all day long. And he was saying, as a result of that sort of mindset, he said there was a time, which is true, you know, when the man would, you know, something broke in the house, the washer machine, the car, something like that, the man, because this is what men did then, they took care of their families and they would go and fix it. And they would teach their kids, sons and daughters, how to fix it too. I kind of grew up like that. My dad was a farmer and I learned how to do all kinds of stuff from him. And he said, but that kind of went away. So now you have this whole generation kind of in between, because I think the younger kids are changing, where you don't fix things. You know, if your car breaks, you call AAA, right? If, you know, your dishwasher breaks, you call whatever. And you know what I mean? You don't actually know how to do anything yourself. Except for Uber Eats, I will say you don't need to cook. Just kidding. But he said there is this trend with kids, and it's on YouTube. But he talks about the YouTube how-to videos that are getting tons of views. And he is seeing, and he's young. He said a resurgence in his generation. Of people wanting to do things for themselves, of people saying, well, you know what, I want to know how to do this. And I think as we look at this shift, and I think there is going to be a job shift as AI does many things. I don't think it's going to be as, I think I mean, they're always, technology always kind of changes some jobs and creates new jobs, which leads to other jobs, right? I think the world has always worked that way. And I think it'll continue to work that way. But I think there's going to be, and I think it's going to be good for all of us, a shift back to people being more independent, knowing how to do things for themselves, how to fix stuff for themselves, and actually producing something, actually making something. I really, and maybe I'm old fashioned, but I think there is something very satisfying. And maybe if it's not even your real job, so to speak, but there's something very satisfying about actually like creating something, making something, doing something. And you can look at it and say, I did that. And teaching your kids, right, to do that too. And it just, so check it out. That's sort of an aside. It hits EKO on X. He has some interesting thoughts. And I think that all of that is going to be good. I think that the economy is going to shift a little bit back more to people who do things. I remember years ago, I was doing a story, and it was the Denver Public Works people, and there were cement was falling, you know, like where I-25 goes over Broadway, right? And chunks of cement were falling from the bridge. The bridge needed repair. And they sent the public works guy, and they'd close it down. There was a public works crew, and they were fixing it. And it was in the summer, and they fixed it. And I was talking to him. I said, what do you guys do in the winter? And like, well, in the winter, it's too cold to fix stuff like this, so we drive snow plows. And then they kind of went through all the things, and I thought to myself, this is the kind of guy you either want to marry or have as your neighbor, because this is the kind of guy who could fix everything. If your roof leaks, if your basement's flooding, this is the kind of guy that you call, right? And I think it's good that there, and I think it's just healthy and good that we're kind of going back, hopefully, maybe to something like that. At least that's what he was saying. And I know in Revs High School, they're offering more and more courses like that. Before, they weren't offering shop, but they are offering more courses in, I guess, what they call the skilled labor. And to Dr. Donna, my memory has it that my father could do anything. He fixed the cars, except a blown engine or transmission. Not tranny, Dr. Donna. He fixed almost everything around the house, even a roof, and he even sewed. Yeah, my dad was the same way. My dad was, yeah, tranny. It's like, he could have fixed that too, Dr. Donna. It sounds like your dad probably could have had it, could have gotten a handle on that kind of situation too. Hey, that is going to do it for us today. Thank you to everybody on Zoom, Todd Sheets, all the great guys at BBS. We will see you on Monday, and everyone else, have a great rest of your week. We'll see you then.